So first and foremost, question. Who has read the book by Warren Buffett on financial statements? I got one.
I read it once. I'm on page 60 on the second time.
Like, you got two.
Okay. I only read it once.
Don't worry about it. I'm only going to cover like maybe a couple of points, not a lot. But I think it's important that we bring these things to the forefront. And, you know, as I stated before, I'm going to make sure that we turn up the value button for 2.0 because I'm about to go pick big ticket on it. And I need to make sure that I have enough content. So that's what's going down, right? So you guys are going to benefit. It's called being grandfathered in.
Nice.
Yeah. Until I raise the price.
I feel.
Yeah, right, yo, until I raise the price. But no, like I told somebody the other day, that won't happen for a while. So you ain't got to worry about that right now. When everybody's making my nag, that's when it's going to happen. Uh-huh. So Sharon hit me up the day. I'm up 90% on Enphase. You're up 100 now, baby.
Ooh. Yeah, I was tearing that out today.
Yeah, whatever. Get out of here. You came in late. You were staring at the bid for like, you could have been up in so many stocks when you'd have started when we started.
I just want
you to know. No, I don't care what you're talking about. If you got to miss a meal, you got to miss a meal.
I don't look like it.
All right, here you go. Let me stop. Listen, I'm having too much fun. I don't know if they're ready for me today. Anyway, question. What is... So let me bring it down. Screen team meeting 101. Check. Question. What is a durable competitive advantage?
I'll give it a go. So durability, competitive advantage. Like, is that considered to the book? Are we talking like in
the book?
Yeah. Okay. About the book. So the durability, according to the book, is, you know, it's like the ability to keep generating revenue without increasing kind of like you know the effort, and that like you have an advantage that can like organically gives you keep generating like the revenue, which, you know, at the end of the day gives you better margins and net income.
Okay, but I'm lost.
Isn't it like a moat or like a cushion or something? Okay.
Moat. Exactly right. Moat. Go ahead, Ruben.
No, can you say the question again? I heard some of it and, you know, I wandered off real quick. What's your question again?
That was Mo's fault. Yeah. I said, what is a durable competitive advantage?
A durable, okay. To me, a durable competitive is something that you provide a product that got like pricing power, right? You could jack prices up if you want. You don't spend that much money on R&D, research and development, which, you know, like growth stocks. They spend a lot of money on research and development, like a Coca-Cola, you know, it has a product that is stable. Like it just, they don't have to like, okay, they don't spend a lot of money on research and development, Coca-Cola, right? It's the same formula, same bottle. So that's what I'll take from it.
Well, you're right as far as the company, and so is Evelyn. It's a company that has staying power, a company that has consistency in earnings, a company that has a high barrier to entry. It's the moat we're talking about when you talk about that durable competitive advantage. No one can just jump in and get into that business. You know, a lot of things to cover. What does SG&A expenses stand for? What does the word SG&A stand for?
SG and 8. And A.
A is an apple. S is a Sam. G is in Gary. A is
selling,
an apple.
Selling, general and administrative expenses.
Did you just look it up?
No, I have my notes in here.
Did you look it up? Yeah, so that's the expenses that, you know, go into selling, administration, and the charges in certain areas as well. So you want to know that. What does the word R&D stand for?
Research and development, that one.
Okay, research. Okay, he beat Ruben to the punch because Ruben had said it earlier.
Yeah.
He took it away from you. Yeah. Okay. What is depreciation?
That so the decrease in like the decrease in the value of like a machine, equipment, or a plant, like a long term asset. That over time the value of it is kind of like start like to expire.
Like say that again. Somebody give me a clearer. Listen, after you talk, sometimes I'll be like, "What did he say?" He's like, "Cause it's like I don't know what movie character I was watching. It was a Deeds character. I forgot the guy's name, but he was." It wasn't go downstairs. Stay on mute. So go ahead, Sharon.
Depreciation is the amount that you write off over the life of the asset, any asset you have in the company.
Correct. So he spoke about a company and he gave an example, which I thought was good. So I grabbed the whole thing. And he talked about a printing press that a company paid $1 million for, right? And so that $1 million came out of cash, right? And then the depreciation, they can only take $100,000 per year for 10 years, right? So when you see, I'm gonna read the note that I wrote so you can get a direct benefit from it. And then I'm gonna kind of elaborate on it a little bit. So it says, 1 million printing press has a lifespan of 10 years, right? So that $1 million they spent on that product or that asset. So it's expensed at $100,000 per year. So that's 10 years. So 1 million gets subtracted from cash and 1 million gets added to plant and got the second part, right? But whatever, I'll come back. Now, and then it becomes, it also shows up as a capital expenditure, right? It's an expense. It's like when Mike asked me the question last week, you know, what a charge off, what that write-off was, it's expensed, right? So then it becomes, it does decrease earnings for the next 10 years, right? But the cost is imaginary. Can anyone tell me why the cost is imaginary?
I got it. What is the depreciation, right?
So why is the cost imaginary?
Is it because the cost
is a complete write-off?
Over 10 years, right? Over time, 100,000.
Well, it's taken away from the earnings.
The earnings.
Right? So that $100,000 the first year is going to subtract from where? The earnings, right?
The earnings.
So why is the cost imaginary?
Don't they put the whole 10 million? No, what is it? A million, right? For the machine. Mm-hmm. Don't they write it off like the first year or something, the whole 10 million, and then they do it over time? Because I
remember time. So that, but that's the depreciation of it. Yeah,
but it was a little trick in the book about the, you know.
That's what I'm going over right now.
Yeah, okay.
Is it because it's predicted?
You have to get in line. Mo's next. Okay. Mo's hands up. Put your hand up.
Okay.
Go ahead, Mo.
So it's because it's like it's not recorded over the next 10 years in the income statement. It just goes in depreciation and kind of like balance sheet, and it's just like recorded once in the balance sheet.
That's how you sound, bro. That's how you sound. And Angelique, you're cheating. You do taxes. Leave me alone. Don't you dare. I'm coming to you last. See if you really know what you're talking about. Go ahead, Evelyn.
I could be wrong, but is it because that number is predicted and not?
Okay, Angelique, give it to me.
You guys are close. But basically when it comes down to taxes, it's because there's no actual transfer of money. So that's why it's called imaginary. So with the depreciation, that's why it's imaginary. There's no actual transfer of cash during that tax year. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Which is quite a pain in the butt when it comes to taxes, but that's what I do.
So here's the deal. When you look at it, if you look at EBITDA, mm-hmm. right? What does EBITDA stand for? Earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, and amortization, right? So what they do is that, so the company already paid the money. They got the depreciation for it. It gets subtracted from earnings, but then Wall Street adds the 100 grand back because they actually didn't use the money.
Yep.
And they use that money for leverage buyouts, which is crazy because what they're saying is, what if the company in 10 years has to buy a new printing press? That money may not be there, right? So that was the example that he gave, and I thought that was a great example to talk about. Yeah, because Buffett believes Wall Street is missing the fact that in 10 years, there may be a need for another printing press. So by adding it back to earnings and using it for, they're using it for leverage buyouts, which they may not have the money in their leveraging their business. What is a non-recurring event? Non-reoccurring event, I'm sorry.
Like a one-time expense or like occasional expenses, not every year.
Oh, look at you. See, look at that. He gave it to us straight. We understood. I was able to turn from Kaizé Saucy to straight walking.
I had to repeat the answer twice in my head
before
saying it.
I'm like, take your time and spit it out. Okay, yes, it's one time or irregular, and you can't use those recurrent items to predict what future earnings are. Because let's say you bought an asset, they bought the same asset for $1 million and they use that example. And let's say in 10 years or 2 years, they sold it for 800,000, but they depreciated it down to let's say $500,000, but there was a 300, I'm just gonna say, what is it? How did they do it? They depreciated it down to $500,000 and sold it for 800,000. So there's a $300,000 profit, right? So that's a one-time occurring event. They're not gonna do that as a business. So you can't really look at that as a steady stream of income. Does that make sense? So it's a one time, or like a proprietary technology, something they sold, right? It's just a one time asset. That's what the others stand for, like intellectual property or something like that. These are good things to know, yes or no?
Man.
Absolutely.
Pretty good thing to know.
I'm just saying, just trying to give a little value train some value. Room, room. All right, because here's what I realized. We all need a coach, right? But I also realized we also need a filter. And you need to have some sandpaper between you and your emotions, you and what needs to be done when looking at these companies. And you also need to realize how much you really don't know. So you don't go out there half cock and make decisions like Evelyn used to do back in the days. And she's like, ah, I love you, Evelyn. I'm only using you because I do. You know what I'm talking about too. I say, don't call me after you make a decision and ask me I'm okay with it. Remember that?
Absolutely. Then it doesn't make any sense for coaching. Yeah, well. Right.
Thank you. It's just what we do. But she co-signed it, so I'm okay. I feel like I didn't pick on her. She just helped me make my point. Oh, man, that's great. Ah! Listen, sorry. Anyway, so why does Warren Buffett view companies based on a pre-tax basis? That seems like a hard one. Going once? Come on, Ruben, jump in.
All right. I might not have it. Okay.
It's okay. We can be wrong here.
He check them out pre-taxes, but then he deep dives into after the taxes, right? To find out who's really, because they these companies, some of them be sneaky, would they right? So he check them pre-taxes, and then he goes after tax, and he said a company that's official and got a true moat don't need to lie on their taxes. Something like that.
You know what? The way you explained it was like mystery meat. You don't know what's in it, but it's definitely meat from some source.
Okay.
So let me break this down.
Break it down.
Okay, so he did a purchase of $139 billion, I think it was, and it was $139 million in Washington Public Pacific.
Okay.
Water company bonds, right? And the pre-tax, the after-tax payment was $22 million, right? So he looked at it as a discount because if he was to, he looks at the company for 45, so it's equivalent to $45 million pre-tax, right? But in order to make the 45 million, which turns out to 22 million after tax, in order to make that investment, he would have to invest 250 million to get the 45 million with the 22 million. So he views it as a 50% discount because he paid 139 million for the bonds and he got 22 million, where his investment of a quarter million would have netted him the same dollar. That did I lose everyone?
So he got more for the same. He got more for the same. Irv, you know what I mean?
Irv said, yes, I lost everyone. Listen, they're going to be like, you're charging me for this? That's hilarious. So, okay, I'll explain it again. Let's say me, you, Irv got together. Let's say the whole team got together and we put together $139 million to go buy bonds, paying a certain coupon that's going to net me $22 million, us, $22 million after taxes, meaning we're not going to pay any more taxes. It's $22 million right there clean. We start sifting around the market. We make a $22 million off of that investment. We start looking around the market to see how much we can we do that again, right? So then someone comes up to us and say, well, listen, you could do that again, but this time, you know, it's actually going to net you pre-tax $45 million. Well, that sounds attractive because you're getting a lot more money. But the key word in that is what? Pre-tax, right? So for that pre-tax $45 million, it's going to cost you a quarter billion to make that same after-tax $22 million, because pretty much $45 million after taxes, it's $22 million is what you're going to receive. You get the point? So if you look at it from a net math, he saved 50% on his money because he didn't have to give a quarter billion to make the same amount of money with $22 million after taxes that he would have made putting up additional $110 million. Does that make any sense now, Irving?
Yep. So he goes
Hold on a second. Irving, does that make any sense?
Yes. So he basically invested this $139 million again to make the same profit. Is that what we're saying
here? Not again, but he once. He just did it to make the same money. But we're going to say, Ruben, yes.
Thank you. Yes, so he would spend half a bill to do the same kind of investment. So he only paid $139 million for it, right? Plus he going into it like a Roth because it's already pre-tax, right? That kind of mindset, right? It's pre-tax money.
Yeah, this is a Roth, Mr. Roth. Yeah, you could do that. Call you Mr. Roth now, Mr. Roth. You're absolutely right. Because with a Roth, you make money and you don't pay taxes on it.
It's pre-tax. You know? That's how he makes
it. Yeah, leave it in there for a certain period of time. But yeah, that's the deal. Anyway, so now, what is income before taxes?
That's gross net, right?
What's income before taxes?
Pre-tax income.
Okay, you both gross do taxes amount. But pause. You both down. You Irv do a little taxes on the side. Angie does taxes on the side. I know you're not going to get this wrong, so I'm going to embarrass you if you do. Now go ahead, give me the answer. I'm just kidding.
Somebody already said it.
No, we were wrong.
You have the net and you have the gross.
What is income? Hold on, I lost my question. Wait a minute. Income before taxes. What's the formula for it?
Oh, it's a formula for it?
Mm-hmm. If you had to break it into a formula, what is it?
Oh. Well, you have your net income minus your taxes, which is your gross income.
Say that again. Your net income what?
Your net income minus your taxes equals your gross income. Taxes and deductions.
All right, let me give it to you because you're just confusing everybody. How did you not? That's why I didn't like accounting in school. I hated accounting in school. Like,
but that's what it saying, is. I mean, I don't like net, you guys. Your net, yeah, you have your gross.
No,
your
no, net. Listen. Okay. And it comes down to this. You take the income, you minus all expenses.
Yeah.
From the income or your deductions, yes, or your expenses. We'll make it simple. Baby food. People try to learn. Mm-hmm. And you and that's before taxes is taken out. So that's right. Income before taxes.
Right.
But you have to take out the expenses first. All right. So what? Where is the income tax paid recorded? No, Angelique and Irv can answer this question now. Where's the income tax paid recorded?
Statement of income.
What?
Income statement.
Thank you. Ding, ding, ding. Good job. So what Ruben was talking about was that typically, well, back then, I'm not sure if it's the same tax rate, but they would say typically it's 35% deducted from that income, that net income. And that's what should be reported as reported to the SEC. So you should be able to look at what they're reporting at SEC, subtract 35%, and that number should be the same amount they paid in taxes. If it's not, then they're kind of playing fuzzy numbers. And that's where you could, it's kind of a little convoluted. But this is really good because what you're doing is you're kind of digging underneath the hood a little bit to see what's really, really good. So where do you really look at it? You're looking at the 10Q and that 10 quarter, that 10K, and you're looking at the footnotes. And you're looking at the non-reoccurring this and the charges that, the write-offs this, right? All of these things that are listed in there, right? And you get a chance to see really what's happening with this company. So, because the numbers always look good, right? They always look good. Oh, they look great. But you got to see what's fat. It's like you think that duck looks really good until you bite into it. It's really greasy and it's really fatty. You understand? You don't really get a full meal out of it unless you like eating duck fat. So he was talking about net income, historical upward trends, and that's good. And he likes to go 10 years back, which is great. You know, 10 years is good. I look at 12 quarters. But 10 years is great because I do that anyway. But I like to see a steady consistency there. So it's pretty much the same thing. He was talking about share repurchases. So if the company's earning the same amount of money, but they're buying the shares back, is that a good thing for the shareholder?
Yes, I think so.
I mean, I look at it like, yeah, but they're earning the same kind of money. So it's like, to me, how do I explain it? Let me see. Let me give it a thought. Okay.
Cameron, explain.
I think they're buying them buying the shares back will kind of decrease their outstanding shares, so that if in fact there are institutions or whomever selling, that'll kind of balance out that selling.
Okay. No. Go ahead, Ruben.
You said they still making the same kind of money. That money ain't growing. Nah, that ain't good. To me,
it's for the long term, it's not good. But when you think about it, their earnings are increasing because the shares is decreasing. So the shareholder equity is increasing, but they're not growing as a company. That makes sense. They're not generating growth. Which would you rather buy? This is from the book. A corporation that makes $100 billion in revenue that's earning $5 billion, or a corporation that's making $10 billion in revenue that's earning $2 billion. Which one would you rather buy?
$2 billion.
Tell me why.
Because it has a higher kind of like margin.
Where did you get margin from? Let me just mess with you. I'll mess with you. It's really earnings. If they're earning $20 billion, their revenue to net earnings ratio, total revenue to net earnings ratio is 20% as opposed to 5%. So there's a lot being lost in expenses, R&D, or whatever expenses or charges they have between that 100 to 5 billion. Does that make sense? And what this does is it allows you to look at companies that say they're good, but, and you compare it and you start to see different things. Like the thing, like, say, I'm going to get more out of this book than anyone here because I have a little bit more experience, right? And so when I start looking at it, I'm like, it's a gold mine to a person that has experience. It doesn't mean you go out and say, okay, this is how we use it. No, it's got to be within, it's like what he did was he remixed Benjamin Graham's investment theory. So you can be, he can be remixed too, right? There's no such thing as anything original underneath the sun, right? When you look at it, go ahead, Ruben.
Yeah, with it, like you said, he remixed Benjamin Graham because he was more like a, he'll buy these companies, hold them for a year or two, and then dump them. But he noticed that the companies he'll dump after sometimes a while, 5-10 years, they'll just keep growing and growing. And something, so he remixed the style.
That's yeah, he just stayed long-term, that's all. And it made so much sense. Yep, absolutely. And so he was talking about if a company has earnings over 20%, chances are they have a durable competitive advantage. If the company's had less than 10%, then they had a lot of competition in an area. So that's a big find. It's a big find. So because how do you distinguish between all these tech companies that are coming to you and all these wild growth companies, even if they're not tech, and they're growing at, oh, we did $3 billion more this quarter. If you can't take them all and line them up and see what percentage of revenue to total earning, net income, same thing as earnings per share, but earnings to revenue, like you can't, if you can distinguish, then you can say, okay, which is better? And then he gave you another jewel, and he was saying just the competitiveness of the airlines and then the banks, and because you can't value them the same way, right? So it's so much to break out, and I have a feeling this is going to be a group favorite because I'm going to keep reiterating some of this stuff as we start getting to the picking stock phase of what we're actually doing. And you know, we go into that stuff, you know, we going through the stocks that I give you to kind of turn, because I'll just sit around. I'll just turn around and just have you run the ruler by it and see which ones make sense and which ones don't. And it's, you know, and then I'll confirm it and say, okay, yeah, this is why, or no, this is not why, or whatever. So when you understand the dynamics of having a real great leader, like I try to mimic these people. What I mean is, there's not a day that I don't think about the value that I want to bring to this crew. There's not a moment that I don't think about it. It is our livelihood here in the Davis household, right? It's one of our streams of income, but I feel like this is it. And the reason why is because what we can do here is so amazing over time that people will look back and go, wow, how'd that happen? We're building relationships. Let me talk about relationships for a moment. Relationships are very important to me. Integrity is the same thing as love. That's important to me. If you're shifty, shady, inconsistent, I don't rock with you. I don't rock with you. Like, I won't. But if you're consistent as a person, I can look you in the eyes. I can see where you live, your address, your DNA. I can see what type of person you are. I'm a rock with you. I don't care where you come from. I'm a rock with you. Why? Because I came from that mud as well. I just crossed the street. I learned from a bunch of people who didn't look like me how to carry myself in a business environment. I learned that they used to say, you Kev, you talk white. I said, no, I talk the language of business. That's what I do. And I learned that. And I understood it. Relationships carry with me. The gentleman that I went to play poker with, I was his mortgage broker. He trusted me. And he invited me into his circle. And he had 100 properties. And he fed me. But I showed up. And one day I thanked him. And he said, Kevin, no, don't thank me. You earned every bit of it. Right? So there's a two side street. There's two, it's a two lane on this street when you deal with me. I don't need you. I want you. That's different. I won't ever be with someone that I need, because needing leads to manipulation and misuse of relationship. But if I want you, well, that's cool, because I can take it or leave it. Now, you have to make me keep coming back. And if I keep coming back and I get comfortable with you, I'm always going to watch what you say. And I'm always going to watch what you do, as I should be watched. And I should be watched with my actions and my words. I want to be the same. I want to be held to the same ruler of accountability that I'm holding you to. So I know that if I go somewhere and it's $1,000 bill on the table, we're going to take our share. We're going to pay it. No one's leaning on anyone. Why? Because that's what we do. Go ahead, Ben.
Yeah. I want to add to that. Like, you know, we were just down in Miami and, you know, conversations that me and my lady have. And she'd be like, wow, Kevin be, you know, he be pulling up. And I said, man, that's love. I said, that's, you know, I break it down to explain it to her. Now we got this thing, like a contractor, right? He'd be like, meet you there at 3:00. The guy doesn't show up. My lady be like, he's not a Kevin. She'll say something like that. Oh, or the guy gets there like an hour late. She'd be like, he's not a Kevin. And I'd be like, yeah, everybody, you know, everybody not punctual like that. And
I appreciate you.
And yeah,
you
know, I don't like to be late. It's real, man. It's real.
Nah, and that's what it is. So I was having a conversation with a realtor today. You know, he's, you know, I sense his intrepidation when he asked me for the $500 for the sponsorship. And I let him kind of spiral a little bit. It was fun. I wanted to hear him, you know. And but I cut him off and I said, it's done. Don't worry about it. And then I said, on one condition. He said, what's the condition? Nothing. Done. And he laughed. Right. And so because when he called me, his name is Delroy. So there's a song by Denroy Morgan. I'll do anything for you. Love that song. Right. So when he called me, I was like, Delroy, every time I see your name, I think of this song. He's like, what? He started laughing. If you understand me and I connect with you, when you call me, it's like, yo, it's like we knew each other for two lives. Right. If you don't, then it becomes, OK, cool. We're not there. So but we were talking about relationships. And being our relationship is new with him. He sent me business and did not have to. And it made my wife $1,000. Did not have to. There's so many people chasing after them for business. And I just got a call randomly from the client. Delroy gave me your name. He said, you'll take care of me. And I knocked it out. I did two houses and her car insurance, right? Then he invited me to a mastermind. And I think I couldn't go. I didn't do a meeting because of that mastermind, because I gave my word and I did it before I left for vacation and I didn't realize it was a Wednesday. So I had to complete my word, right? And he introduced me to about 7 brokers that own their own real estate companies. So relationships are everything. It'll get you everywhere. And the end result of it is that, listen, if in 2 years, a person that started with 50 grand has 100 to 70, 80, and then you know, a person at 100 or 200 has 300, 350 when this market comes out of whatever funk it's in, right? Because you're going to come out of this funk. I'm going to show you on a research call. I'm not going to give it to you here because then I don't want to be scattered and I want to take my smoke. But when it really, and then you have money, you have capital, you can do things, right? And I don't even care if you got 5 grand, it turns to 15. You can do things, right? You can do things and you get plugged in. As I start to grow up, because I'm going to grow, relationships will grow. Let me tell you another story about relationships. And it's along the lines of the gentleman that I mentioned. I won't mention his name. But I went to play poker at a free poker tournament in 2005. I met a young lady named Naomi. She was the title clerk at a title company. I just got my mortgage broker license, but I didn't show up dressed like this. I showed up dressed up in a suit. Why would I show up dressed up in a suit? Who can guess?
So a suit, like, you know, pervades like professionalism, like, you know.
Charisma. No, it's coming home from work. That's why.
Missed it.
Anyway, but it was weird because this is Florida and I wore suits as a Wall Street broker all the time when people go to the street, go to suits and go to work in their spandex here. It's crazy, right? So that made people curious because I was the only one dressed up. What do you do for a living? And I tell them I was a mortgage broker. She handed me her card. Okay, thank you. I appreciate it. I gave her one of mine. I walked away. I didn't have one. I just passed my test. I didn't have one client. I'm playing poker. I was in Coral Springs playing with her. But then I was playing poker at another free tournament in Hollywood. And I'm playing against one of my other clients who became a client. What do you do? I'm this. Well, I'm looking to do a mortgage. Okay. I said, well, I charge 1% on the front, 1% on the back. He said, oh, really? Because they were trying to bang you out for 4 points here. Right? So he said, okay. And I did that mortgage in like, I don't know, 6-7 days, super quick. And I went with him to the closing. I would drive my clients to the closing too. So I went to the closing. I showed up and Naomi was like, you showed up at the closing? No one shows up at the closing. And so she introduced me to my biggest client, which was their biggest client. He had 100 properties. I went to his house. He'd give me 2 mortgages a week to close. 2 a week, like that. Sometimes 3. He had 100 properties, right? And I knew how to do every single loan with every single body. And when I opened up my mortgage company, we probably did at least 70, 80 properties. And it was all off a relationship. Wait a minute. Now, because I met him and I took care of him and everybody knows who he is, all of a sudden, I got the biggest exit realty in Coral Springs. They had 400 realtors. Wait a minute. Now we get together with Russell, and Russell, we become partners in that. So now it's coming my way and I'm good. And then the market cracked and we went out of business. That was the end of that. But in between that relationship and the building that I went to, the title company above that was another real estate company. So Mike is the person that I do business with now. And when he was just started out, he was just starting out as a realtor. Now he owns an agency with 180, 190 realtors in it, and I'm his guy now. Because he remembered how fast, efficient, effective, honest, and I move with integrity, and I'm likable, and I believe in God. That makes sense too, right? But it's a relationship that happens. So that's why I tell people, never diss the door, man. You never know what door they're gonna open up next. Treat everybody the way you want to be treated. And then treat people the way they treat you. Make sense? Don't over-treat either, because you'll beat yourself later. But the bottom line is, it's all about relationships. And I thought that was something that I wanted to mention, because when I'm doing this, I'm really building relationships. Other than that, I'm done. I'm going to go help the wife do what I got to do. I appreciate you. You'll have a great night. See you next week.
Thank you. Thanks, yeah. Kevin.
Have a good night, everybody.
Thanks, you're welcome. Kevin. You're very welcome. Thanks, everybody. You're very welcome. You're 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 welcome.
I love that energy today.
Let's go. Everybody gets a you're welcome. Hello. Don't be ashamed. All right, guys. Peace.